at Crafty.
I thought you were Fetch, he said, too weary to do anything but bluntly state his surprise.
He could sense the smile in the wizard's silhouette, hear it in his voice.
Would she truly be so quick to forgive?
Shrugging, Jackal turned back to the river. Why not? I am. She kicked me in the nut basket, but do you see me holding a grudge?
Crafty came and stood beside him.
Ah, yes. But you are both comfortable with violence, with physical pain. Today, friend Jackal, you launched an unfamiliar assault.
Jackal wished the wizard's words had left him confused. Instead, he found them all too clear.
Shouldn't you be watching over our wayward elf? He asked sharply. See that Fetch's comfort with violence doesn't make an appearance?
And what do you suppose I could do if it did? Crafty asked, a hint of sad amusement in his strange accent. Kill Fetching for defying me? That would only make an enemy of you and the Thriceblood. Who gains from this?
Not I. Not you. Then stop her without killing her, Jackal replied with little feeling. Crafty laughed at him.
Because I am so potent a sorcerer that anything is within my power? There is so little you understand, friend Jackal. No, it is with sorrow that I must admit the elf's life is a feather when weighed against the trust of your hoof. I must trust to your female friend's forbearance and her acceptance of the truths you use to wound her.
Jackal was feeling annoyed and naked. It was difficult to find an advantage debating with a man when you sat at his feet without a stitch.
Why do we matter to you? He demanded. The Grey Bastards. Why did you come to us? Why did you come with me into the marsh?
Crafty eased himself down on the rock. His face and hands were completely clean, though Jackal had not seen him bathe. The wizard took a deep, satisfied breath and stared out across the river.
Ulwundulas is truly a marvelous country, and only you can guide me through it.
There are 7 other half-orc hoofs in the Lotlands, Jackal told him. Any one of them would have taken you in.
None but the Grey Bastards would do.
Crafty said this whimsically, but something in the set of his jaw and the way he watched the water announced he would not discuss the matter further.
I might have made you an enemy today, Jackal said after a long silence. Fetching, I mean.
The world is her enemy,
Crafty replied, still facing the Alhundra.
It must be, or she could not be who she is.
And who do you think she is? Jackal asked, knowing he sounded absurdly protective. A languid smile appeared on Crafty's face as he turned.
Someone capable of terrible greatness.
Jackal grunted. Crafty was not wrong.
I am curious, the wizard ventured. How she came to be counted amongst your brotherhood. It is rare, yes, for a woman to join a hoof?
It is impossible, Jackal said. But she did it. Well, the 3 of us did.
There is a tale there.
Jackal twisted his mouth. Not much of one. It only takes 2 sworn brothers to propose another for inclusion in the hoof. Serving as a slophead helps, but isn't required. After that, it's a matter of votes. Oates and I put Fetching forward a few years back. She got the votes. That's it. She was worthy and earned her place.
I am thinking that was because you trained her, Crafty said lightly.
Hells, this wizard didn't miss anything. Jackal peered at him sidelong for a moment. Crafty wore a patient, careless grin.
Yes, Jackal admitted, though it was her idea, in a way. Oates and I just continued what another started, what Fetch could not let go of.
He did not much feel like storytelling, but found himself talking all the same. Guilt guided his tongue, as if relating Fetch's accomplishments could somehow pardon him for his harsh words to her. There used to be an old thrice-blood in the Bastards. Warbler. He was a veteran of the incursion, helped found the Hoof, and was the Claymaster's most trusted rider. Oates's mother, Beryl, was his bed-warmer, though it is more truthful to say that he was hers. When he wasn't on patrol or doing something for the chief, Warbler was at the orphanage. Closest thing to a father any of us had. We called him Warbor, because his name was hard for the little ones to say. Of course, he doted on Oates, him being a thrice and Beryl's son. But you couldn't separate Oates from me and Fetch, not that Warbler wanted to. He taught us little things, more as we got older, about caring for hogs and weapons, about the Hoof and the ways of Thix, their language. We were young, but he was grooming us to be bastards. Two of us, at least. We were 8, maybe 9 years old when he challenged the Claymaster for the chief seat. Never really knew why, but he threw his axe. Others joined him, but not enough. The challenge failed. The bastards who supported his bid retrieved their axes and begged the Claymaster's forgiveness, but not Warbler. As the instigator of the challenge, he had to stand before the stump and allow the chief to throw an axe of his own. That's our code. The Claymaster showed mercy. I guess for the years he and Warbler had shared during the war, he allowed him to go nomad. Life continued without him, more or less the same for a few years. Until the day Oates and I walked to the kiln to become slopheads, leaving Fetch behind in Winsome. She ran off that night. Beryl had to beg the Claymaster to send riders to look for her. They found her within a day. Oates and I got to see her. She told us she was going to find Warbler, so he could finish teaching her how to be a rider. Even then she was stiff-necked, and we knew she would do as she said. So Oates and I promised to teach her all we learned, to keep her from leaving. That was the only reason, just to keep her safe. I don't think either of us really meant it at the time, but what else could we do? Beryl may have suffered another run, but the chief wouldn't. No one was going to search if Fetch left a second time. It was nearly impossible, those first years. Oates and I were all but fettered to the kiln, but Fetch was patient. Jackal let out a small laugh. Hard to imagine that now. Anyway, life wasn't the same without her. We both felt it, me and Oates, so what started out as an empty oath became a true purpose. We wanted her with us in the Hoof. It was easier once we were sworn brothers. Fetch had not been idle during our time as slops, and was a better aim with a thrum than either of us. But she couldn't keep a hog hidden in the thatching the way she did a stock bow, so her riding was poor. We were sneaking her out on patrols with us within a month of becoming bastards. What took us nearly 8 years to learn, she mastered in less than 3. When it was time, Oates and I made our case for her. There were a few more members then, and we had made friends. We won the vote and earned the chief's ire, but that didn't matter. We were whole again. As if summoned, Fetch appeared on the bank, helping the Tyne girl out of the water, both dripping. The delicate, rust-brown limbs of the elf girl contrasted sharply next to Fetch's green frame of curves and muscle. Quickly, they walked to the fig grove, where Fetching began rummaging in her saddlebags for dry clothes. "She is beautiful," Jackal said, watching her. The women were far enough away for him to look without too much shame. Besides, he was nude. Surely that made his scrutiny less an intrusion. Crafty followed his gaze and nodded once before looking back to the river. With some effort, Jackal followed the wizard's example. "But that is not the reason for her Hoof name," he continued. "When she was voted into the Bastards, the Claymaster said that women were only good for 2 things. Fucking and fetching," Crafty finished blandly. He reached over and began unwrapping Jackal's soggy splint. When he spoke again, his tone was sympathetic.
And today you reminded her of that?
No, Jackal replied, his mouth wrinkling with borrowed bitterness. She's never forgotten it. Chapter 10 Jackal was thankful Delia's room was on the ground floor of the brothel. He did not relish the thought of a climb with a shattered arm. The injury continued to pain him greatly, and the chills of a fever had begun to plague him in intervals. Crouching in the shadows below the window, he listened to the sounds of Delia entertaining two of Bermudo's soldiers, gritting his teeth as the grunts and groans of the frails intensified. Delia's own feigned moans of pleasure were muffled. Jackal tried not to think about what was occupying her mouth. Somewhere behind him, on the night-shrouded hill of boulders and scrub, Fetch was no doubt smiling wolfishly. Let her mock, long as she covered his damn back. The moon was high by the time the heavy breathing subsided, replaced by the tense stillness of a room filled with slumbering occupants. Delia always waited for her humps to fall asleep before quietly removing herself to wash. She had done that with Jackal in the early days, when he was still nothing but a mongrel paying for quim. But he had not felt her rise after coupling for nearly 5 years. He was more now than a sticky stink that needed to be scrubbed away at the first opportunity. That was the reason he had come to her window first, instead of creeping directly to Sancho's chambers and demanding answers with a knife under the slovenly whoremaster's chins. Easing himself up, Jackal peered through the broken window slats and waited for the familiar shadow to detach itself from the crowded bed. As soon as Delia's silhouette appeared, he hissed sharply. There was little danger of waking the soldiers. Sancho's girls knew how to drain a man. Jackal watched as Delia paused. She had heard. She left the room noiselessly, and Jackal crouched back down before hurrying along the brothel wall, making for the fence that enclosed the exterior bathhouse. There was no door from the outside, so Jackal waited until two soft knocks sounded on the far side of the wood before jumping up and grabbing the top of the fence with his good hand. Pulling upward, he hooked a knee over the posts and leveraged himself over. His splinted arm made the drop awkward, and Delia was at his side before he could straighten.
"You're hurt," she whispered.
"Not much," Jackal lied, sweeping the wet gloom of the small courtyard for signs of others.
"None are about," Delia assured him. "This way."
She led him toward the low, rough-hewn timber building that Sancho had built for the girls and his patrons. Jackal found the bathhouse revolting, preferring the purity of a moving river over the stagnant soup contained in the half-dozen tubs. "Be like soaking in ball sweat," Jackal muttered, half to himself, as Delia directed him toward a bench.
"We fetch fresh water from the well, you oaf."
Jackal sat and stared at the nearest tub, making a face. Still. Delia slipped out of her thin robe and poured water from a pitcher into a nearby basin. Taking up a rag, she ducked behind a wicker screen. Her voice drifted quietly from beyond the partition.
"So why the skulking visit?"
Jackal did not respond immediately. He kept his eyes fixed on the entryway to the baths, his ears open for sounds of approach. Delia's ablutions were swift, and she stepped from behind the screen, her red hair black with water. Jackal's mind conjured an unbidden image of Fetching and the Tyne girl coming from the river, comparing Delia's beauty to theirs. He hated to admit it, but the human horror came up woefully short. Though still in her 20s, a hard life of professional debauchery had taken its toll. The flesh of Delia's face showed subtle wrinkles at the mouth and brow, her breasts and belly just beginning to fall. Somehow she appeared both soft and underfed. Yet for all the imperfections dredged to the surface by unfair measure against Fetch and the she-elf, Jackal still felt his blood quicken
at the sight of her familiar body. He dipped his head so that she would not see the flare of lust, but was not quick enough.
"Is that all?" Delia teased. "A quick thrust to ease the pain of your injury that is not much?"
She approached and swung a leg over the bench, placing her weight on his lap, before bringing the other leg around. Straddling him, her wet hair tickling coldly against his nose, Delia lifted his chin with a finger.
"I wondered how long the cavalry would keep you out," she whispered.
She must have chewed a sprig of mint, for her breath cooled the inch of air between them. "And how long does Captain Bermudo plan on billeting his troops here?" Jackal managed to ask through his growing desire.
She flicked her tongue at the tip of his nose. "Until the purse on their belts, or the one between their legs, has run dry."
Jackal wrapped his bandaged arm around the small of Delia's back and pressed her close, ignoring the painful pressure in his bones. With his good hand, he pushed the wet locks away from her face, then seized her lower jaw roughly, causing her to grin.
"Damn it, strumpet," he said without rancor. "I need no games. How long?"
"I do not know," she replied, taking delight in his touch. "Bermudo has them coming in shifts, never less than 8 men. A pair leaves every day or so, but not until they are relieved from the Castile."
"Hells," Jackal swore. "Does he mean to make this a permanent barracks?"
Delia seemed puzzled by the question.
"You knocked him senseless, Jack. Killed his man. What else would you expect he'd do?"
She began to grind her hips into Jackal's lap, biting her lower lip. Jackal's desire fled. He barely felt the inviting revolutions, the breathy kisses upon his neck.
Expect? Didn't expect him here that morning, or that he would order us killed.
Reckon I got no notion what to expect from Captain Bermudo, or anyone.
Delia's motions ceased, a worried frown frozen on her face.
Jack?
I think my chief used the brothel to deliver a Tyne girl to the sludge man.
What?
You didn't know?
Why would I know something about your hoof that you didn't?
You didn't see Sancho bring in an elf girl?
Delia looked at him as if he had gone mad.
Elves don't hoard, Jack.
No, she was a captive. We found her in the Old Maiden.
We?
Me and Oates and Fetch and this new recruit. We managed to get the girl out.
Delia's eyes widened.
You took her from the sludge man?
Jackal nodded. When I told him he couldn't keep her, he went mad. Madder than usual. He almost killed us all. The girl's safe, but...
Now you're stuck with a daughter of the Tynes,
Delia said, her head giving the barest of shakes.
Jack!
I know, he cut her off, before the hopelessness in her voice infected him. Worse than that, it may all be because the Claymaster arranged it. Has Hoodwink been here recently? Delia's brow knit.
That the ghost-looking one with all the scars?
Yes.
Once or twice to collect from Sancho, but not in months. He never stays long, never takes a woman. Good thing, too. He scares us.
Whores didn't frighten easily, especially in the Badlands. It would take something like Hoodwink to do it. Jackal stared at the floor beyond Delia's waist.
Was he wrong about all of this?
Delia wouldn't have seen Hood if he didn't want to be seen. But gut feelings and suspicion weren't enough. The dark thoughts must have shown on his face, for Delia hooked a finger under his chin and lifted his attention back to her face.
What are you going to do?
The only thing I can. Get to Sancho and carve the truth out of him.
Fuck, Jackal!
Delia cursed, her voice rising a bit much for comfort. Shushing her with a sharp look, Jackal slung her off his lap and crept to the door of the bathhouse. He waited until he was certain none had heard, then turned back to face Delia. She was standing now, too, wrapped back in her shift and staring at him with something between alarm and anger.
"Have you lost your mind?"
Her voice was again low, but she managed to punch with her words. She thrust a finger toward the brothel.
"There are 10 cavaleros sleeping within a piss stream of where you stand."
"Exactly," Jackal said. "Sleeping. Half are drunk and all are fuck tired. I can get in and out before any of them roll over."
"For what?" Delia hissed. "To make Sancho admit he smuggled flesh for your chief? Safer to trust your gut and leave him be."
"I don't need him to admit to the elf. I need him to tell me why he chose to betray the deal, turn on the Claymaster."
"Turn on him?"
"Sancho let Garcia's horse loose. I figure he got spooked, but didn't have the stones to completely turn cloak. So he used the horse to get Bermudo's attention, gets the cavaleros back here without admitting he knows anything. Something made him decide it was better to throw in with the Castile than with the Claymaster. I need to know what that was." A ripple of confusion played across Delia's face, but settled quickly.
"Jack, it wasn't Sancho."
Jackal stilled.
"It was Oliver,"
Delia told him.
"The stable boy?"
Delia nodded, a look of sympathy on her face, as if she were telling Jackal someone had died.
"He wasn't used to handling a war horse. It was too spirited for him.
It took 3 of us to pull Sancho off when he found out. We thought he was going to kill Oliver, the beating he was giving."
Jackal's jaw clenched. "So, not a betrayal, an accident. A fucking accident. 6 men butchered and burned, all because Garcia's mount was as unruly as its master and bullied past a brothel's underfed stable boy."
Jackal rubbed at his face, felt his mouth turn upward. He started laughing, had to make an effort to keep it contained to his throat.
"Oh, shaft my ass. This is... fuck."
Delia took a step.
"Jackal, you need to get away from here."
"Can't," he said, his voice settling. "Sancho still has answers I need."
"You beautiful, brave fool."
Delia said it almost to herself, her gaze drifting over him. After 2 more slow steps, she was reaching up to take his face in her hands.
"Listen to me. Greed and fear are all that Sancho knows. Bermudo's men are filling his hands with coin and his halls with swords. If he suspects the bastards are coming for him, I'd say the arrangement works in his favor. You said it. Whatever his designs, the Castile is now behind him."
"Frails on foals," Jackal scoffed.
"The gray bastards."
"No!"
Delia snapped, shaking his face roughly, forcing him to focus on her.
"Listen! You were born in the lots, Jackal, but I have been to Hisparta. All the mongrel hoofs together could not stand against even one of the crown's armies."
"Piss," Jackal replied, pulling away.
"If they were so mighty, they wouldn't need us to guard their doorstep. They wouldn't rely on us to keep the fix at bay."
Delia's face went slack.
"You really believe that, don't you? You don't see Ulwandulas for what it is."
"And what is it, Delia?"
"Scraps!"
She leaned forward and whispered the harsh word with such force that spit flew from between her teeth.
"A pile of guts and gristle and shit-smeared innards. The leavings of a feast. Filth that can only be stomached by orcs and vultures and... jackals."
"That's what you think of me? A carrion eater?"
Delia smiled bitterly, looking away.
"It's what we all are. You, me, Sancho, even Bermudo and the other well-born cavaleros. You know it. You said it yourself. I heard you the morning Fetching killed that fop. Fobbed off here to be forgotten. That's what you told them. You think you are any better?"
"As you said," Jackal muttered, "I was born here."
"And you are going to die here, soon, if you test your luck tonight."
Jackal clenched his jaw with frustration.
"I can't let the Claymaster continue leading us, Delia. I can't.
We may have made a mistake killing Garcia, but he's making it worse with his madness. I need to unseat him. Sooner or later, I am going to challenge him, and that will be nothing but a test of luck if the others can't see what he's done. I can't show them without answers. Answers Sancho has. What else can I do?
I don't know, Delia replied, but I can't let you throw your life away.
What does that mean?
It means I'm sorry.
Before he could stop her, Delia snatched a washing basin up off the bench and heaved it into a cluster of clay ewers on a far table. The pottery shattered and fell, stridently offending the calm of night. Jackal flinched at the tumult, then froze, staring at Delia.
Go, she said.
Voices were already echoing hollowly through the walls of the brothel. The rushing footsteps would not be far behind. Baring his teeth in a silent snarl, Jackal fled the bathhouse and ran to the fence. Scrambling up the side, he reached the top and found Delia had followed him out. She placed a hand on his calf and looked up at him imploringly.
"Keep the girl safe," she insisted. "Keep Oates and Fetching close to you. Keep yourself safe."
Meeting her gaze, Jackal nodded before dropping over the far side of the fence. He was sprinting as soon as his feet struck the dust. Rough voices sounded in the courtyard before he had gone a dozen strides. They questioned Delia, but the words were lost to the pounding of his blood as he ran for the cover of the rocks. Fetching met him halfway, her stockbow covering his escape. As soon as he was past her, she spun and caught up, but said nothing until they were safely hunkered down amongst the boulders.
"Did you get to the flesh-peddling fuck?"
Jackal shook his head. "No. We need to get back to Oates and the hogs. The Cavaleros might be following soon."
"Might?"
Jackal was not about to explain to Fetching why Delia had given him up. Instead, he motioned insistently for them to get moving, using the necessity of speed to avoid answering. They hurried through the night, hopping boulders and hot-heeling over scrubland. Skidding down the side of a gulch, they reached Oates, standing sentry over the tine and the hogs.
"What happened?" the big thrice asked.
"Woke the Cavaleros," Jackal replied quickly, throwing a leg over Hearth's back. "We need to ride." Fetching was already mounted, the elf girl sitting demurely in the saddle in front of her. Oates frowned.
"What about the mud plower?"
Jackal shot an aggravated look at him.
"What?" "The wizard," Oates clarified. "Don't you want to wait on him?"
Jackal cast a look around. In his haste to be gone, he had not noticed that one hog stood without a rider.
"Where did he go?"
Jackal demanded. Oates gave an innocent shrug.
"Sancho's."
"The fuck?"
Fetch said.
"He left not long after you two,"
Oates explained, his voice growing angry as he became defensive.
"He said it was part of the plan. Figured you knew."
"Knew what, Oates?"
Jackal was nearly shouting. "That he was going to go off on his own mysterious errand while you sat here and composed poems for Ugfuck?"
"What was I supposed to do?"
"Try and stop him," Fetch suggested.
"He breathes burning bugs,"
Oates told her sharply.
"I don't tangle with that."
"Forget it," Fetching said. "Let's just go."
Jackal was inclined to agree with her, but before he could make a decision, Crafty came skipping awkwardly down the side of the gully, his gut jostling beneath his robes.
"Apologies,"
the wizard said breathlessly as he approached.
"We can be off now."
"What were you doing?"
Jackal barked. Crafty was now astride his barbarian and mopping at his brow with a silk scarf.
"Oh," he replied airily, "I went inside the pleasure house."
Oates issued an incredulous laugh.
"Did you just duck in for a fuck?"
"Truly," the wizard said, fanning himself. "One does have needs."
Oates looked confused.
"I thought you were backy."
Jackal was neither amused nor bewildered. He just wanted to be gone. But Fetch's suspicions were screaming.
"That place was dead for the night," she said. "Who did you find willing to open her legs so late? Especially to a half-orc, when the Cavaleros are lodging there to keep us out.
Eva, Crafty replied simply, his cheeks billowing out with every breath.
Eva?
Oates grunted a laugh. Oh, she'd do it.
Jackal hesitated. Could the wizard truly have gotten into the brothel, found a willing woman, bedded her, and gotten out without being seen? There was certainly time. Jackal had waited under Delia's window for quite a span.
Jackal!
Fetching's voice cut through his thoughts. We'll sort it later, he said. We need to move.
No need to rush,
Crafty said, retrieving a skin from his bag and removing the stopper to take a long drink. I took pains against any pursuit during my leaving.
More fucking magic?
Oates inquired, his face wary, but his voice appreciative.
Friend Oates, Crafty winked, there is little mystical about 10 incontinent horses. If the Frails, as you all say, want to give chase, they will be doing so on their own feet.
Popping the stopper back into the skin with the heel of his hand, the wizard gestured.
Shall we?
Jackal looked into the night.
Let's ride. Where? Oates asked.
Jackal thought a moment. He needed to get his arm fixed, and quickly. He was going to need both hands if he had any hopes of wrestling this mess into submission.
To Zirko, he said simply.
Oates's face went slack.
Brother, I don't know.
Are you loon-brained? Fetching said. That little shit won't help you.
I have no choice, Jackal snapped, his rage at Delia's actions boiling over. He held his injured arm forth, gritting his teeth as he spoke to keep from screaming.
I can barely feel it anymore, Fetch. It's gone too long. You want I should let Grocer cut it off? Because that's all there is left, unless the priest helps me. You don't have to come, but I am riding for Strava.
Fetch's jaw hardened as he spoke, but her gaze softened a touch.
He'll demand a price.
I know. Fetching chewed on his response for a moment.
Take the tine. I'll take point. Oates, rear guard.
The thrice nodded. Fetching relinquished the elf, not bothering to hide her enthusiasm to be rid of the extra rider. The tine was less pleased, clinging to Fetch's saddle for a moment. The trepidation was brief, however, and a few gentle words from Jackal, coupled with the less-than-patient shoves from Fetching, succeeded in bringing her over to Hearth's back. Using his injured arm to hold the girl steady about her narrow waist, Jackal took hold of the barbarian's mane with his other hand and put heel to hog. Behind him, he could hear Crafty and Oates jesting back and forth.
So, you do favor women?
What is the expression here? Any port in a storm? I think you understand.
Ah, well, you need a new saying then, like any ass in the night, because it's all the same in the dark, yeah?
Well, not all the same. I am certain I would have known if it was the buttocks of, say, a strapping thrice-blood.
Rein up there, wizard. I ain't backy. Though if I was, you can be sure I wouldn't be the backy one, or whatever.
No, I am certain that is true.
There was a long pause. Then Oates's voice rumbled again, his words slow with bemused pondering.
Eva does like it between the cheeks, though. Course, it's extra.
Crafty giggled.
But of course!
Kicking his heels into Hearth, Jackal rode farther ahead, trying to leave Oates and Crafty's laughter behind. Fetching was somewhere in the night, scouting far enough ahead that she was lost from view. Jackal quickly settled into the rhythm of riding double, and tried to keep his attention on the shadowy landscape for signs of trouble, but his head swam with the effort of unraveling the events of the past days. Thinking was difficult. Now that he had voiced the truth about his arm aloud, it seemed the wound was quickly worsening, eager to lend his words credence. Every one of Hearth's steps sent a pulse of pain through his swollen arm. but the pain was better than the creeping, queasy numbness. Sickened and sweating, Jackal rode through the night, his every effort soon bent to staying in the saddle. Chapter 11. The halflings lived in the tomb of their gods. Little more than a large hill of rotting dirt crowned with a crumbling tower, Strava was a canker on the already unfortunate face of the flatlands. The entire construction was a decrepit, colorless sight, yet its stunt-limbed stewards revered it as a holy place. Jackal likened religion to madness. He had heard that in the north, in the great cities of Hisparta, there were more temples than well-fed children, that 100 faceless gods received the wealth of the nobles and the fearful pleas of the peasants. He found that difficult to imagine, but Delia, Ignacio, and others had assured him it was true. Thankfully, such belief was all but unknown in Ulwundulas. Perhaps the Badlands were gods forsaken, but Jackal preferred to think that the lots were home to those who had no need of invisible old men, dog-headed demons, and sour-faced crones. Here, faith was better placed in a strong mount, a loaded stockbow, and a few solid companions. Currently, Jackal had two of the three. His stockbow was lost to the marsh, but at least Hearth was beneath him, and his friends were at his side. They all stared with reddened eyes at Strava, squinting against the sun that rose beyond the jagged tower. The ride had been long and close to centaur territory. Fortune was smiling, however, and no horse cocks came galloping out of the shadows, bellowing for blood.
"Remarkable," Crafty said,
shielding his eyes with a hand at his brow as he peered at the tower.
"Give me the kiln any day," Fetching groused. "I hate this place. Like a damn carcass. All those little black shits wriggling in and out."
"All right," Jackal cut in. "I need help here, so no more insults. That includes little black shits.
Oates, who is their god? I don't want a stump because you two pissed on our tongues."
"Bellico," Oates answered dutifully. "But they also call him..." The thrice's face scrunched, struggling to recall the name, but Fetching came to his rescue.
"The Master Slave," she said, her voice adopting a bored tone as she recited facts quickly. "He was a human 1,000 years ago and a great warrior. Fought some gods and won, but he could not have done it without his stumpy servant."
Jackal gave her a pointed look.
"Without his halfling servant," Fetch corrected herself begrudgingly.
"And the servant's name?" Jackal pressed.
Fetch looked at him like he was dull-witted. "Zirko, they're all named that."
"Just the High Priest," Jackal told her. "Oates?"
"Bellico asked the first Zirko how he could reward him, and the little fucker..."
Jackal threw up a hand.
"Hells."
"Sorry," Oates said, trying not to grin.
"Zirko asked for a wife, to return home, and a people of his own."
"That is not correct."
It was Crafty who had spoken, and all eyes drifted toward him.
"Wife, home, people,"
the wizard repeated, his gaze never leaving the distant tower.
"These Zirko took for himself only after he was granted his true reward. The gift he requested from Bellico, so the halfling's claim, was, 'Master, I would have you now be as I was.' With those words, the diminutive slave placed a god under his command."
Jackal nodded. "You want to finish?" Crafty faced him then, his thick cheeks gathered up above a smile.
"Do you truly think I do not know the rest, friend Jackal?"
"I figure we are about to find out," Jackal said, staring the fat wizard down. With a shrug, Crafty turned his attention back to Strava.
"Bellico granted his faithful slave's wish, and put his power at Zirko's service. Zirko took the most beautiful of women as wife. She was not stunted, yet the new prophet declared that all her children would be as their father. From Zirko's loins flowed the halfling race. And all the Stumpies praised his balls ever after, Fetching scoffed. Indeed, Crafty replied, oblivious to her mockery. They call him the Hero Father, but it is Bellico that they chiefly worship, and he only that they recognize as a god. Fetch stretched her back in the saddle and expelled an impatient breath. We all caught up on Waddler religion? Good, let's ride. Get this done. Kicking at her hog, Fetching rode forward, winding through some scrub before heading directly across the plains toward Strava.
I don't think the halflings like being called waddlers, Oates said, purposefully needling Jackal. Grinning, the big mongrel clicked his tongue at Ugfuck and rode after Fetching.
Jackal went more slowly. Sometime before dawn, the Tyne girl had fallen asleep, and he did not wish to wake her if he could help it. Her head rested against the arm he was using to guide Hearth, while his other held her steady in the saddle. After hours of this, his limbs were cramped, the muscles screaming at him for a change in position. He endured the growing physical discomfort in order to have some peace in his mind. When she was awake, the elf's mute placidity was unnerving. Jackal hated that she feared him. It was prideful, but he had freed her from a true terror, and felt that her continued dismay somehow linked him to the sludge man's depravity.
Truly it is a wonder,
Crafty's voice broke through his brooding. Jackal turned and found the wizard riding beside him. Crafty motioned at Strava.
It is said that before he ascended to godhood, the warlord Bellico commanded his remaining men to ride to Ulwondulas, the only land he had not trodden. Along the way, each man was to fill his helm with earth and drag a stone upon his shield. In this way, the mound was raised and its tower constructed with the conquered bones of distant lands.
Jackal grunted. I've heard the legend before.
Indeed, Crafty replied amiably. I'm impressed with your knowledge, friend Jackal.
It's important to know enough about the halflings' religion to avoid offending them, Jackal said. Folk who hold to gods are often prickly.
Prickly? It is a good word. One which describes you these last hours, I think.
You got something you want to say, wizard? Say it.
You fear to trust me.
Jackal turned to look at Crafty. His pudgy face was still smiling behind his manicured beard.
You don't give straight answers, Jackal told him. Not about why you rode with me into the marsh, and not about why you went into that brothel. You didn't bugger any whore last night, no matter what you claim.
This is so, Crafty admitted calmly.
You want to take a run at the truth? Jackal asked, his sour mood turning the question into a threat.
I went in to ensure you came out. That is also the reason I went with you to the marsh. Both are the truth.
If you make me ask why at the end of every one of your statements, Crafty, I'm going to knock your fat ass off that hog. The bead dangling from the wizard's beard braid danced as he chuckled.
I simply want what you want, friend Jackal. You leading the Grey Bastards. And before you strike me, the why of the matter is, I too wish for something. My hope is that you and the hoof I will help you claim will help me when the time comes. But today I am at your service. I hope that will suffice and keep your pricks from my flesh.
Prickles, Jackal corrected, smiling despite his best efforts.
He let the matter drop, trusting in his gut. It had told him Crafty was hiding something about the brothel and been right. Now it was telling him the wizard was being truthful, if not entirely forthcoming. Jackal did not know what Crafty wanted from the bastards, and right now he didn't care. He had sworn no oaths, made no bargains, and was not beholden to aid the wizard in whatever ambitions he pursued. For now, Jackal had a powerful sorcerer on his side, one who wanted to help him replace the Claymaster. Best not to check the hog's tusks too carefully. His most immediate concerns were ahead of him, where a cadre of horsemen was converging on Fetching and Oats.
"Are those?" Crafty began.
"Unyars," Jackal confirmed. "The descendants of Bellico's army. They are fiercely loyal to the halflings. Come on, we better catch up before Fetch says something that will earn her an arrow in the lungs." No longer concerned with the elf girl's slumber, Jackal urged Harth into a quick trot. The jostling woke her. As her head came up off his arm, her weight no longer pressed against his torso, which was both a relief and a disappointment. Jackal could not see her face, but he could sense her taking the situation in quickly, her attention fixing on the eight riders now surrounding Oats and Fetching. As always, the Unyars had their recurve bows in hand, but Jackal was relieved to see no arrows knocked. He slowed Harth's pace as he drew near, carefully riding between the horses to join his companions. Crafty followed his lead. The Unyars' horses allowed them to sit taller than the half-orcs upon their hogs, and the men stared down with their keen, slanted eyes. They were a stocky breed, shorter than the average Hisparthan, their tanned skin tinged with yellow. Their broad chests were covered with scale armor, and their belts hung heavy with full quivers, stout throwing axes, and curved swords. Jackal found their leader by the presence of the trumpet hanging from his saddle horn. "We are members of the Grey Bastards," Jackal told the man. "We come to you, humbly, to seek the wisdom of Zirko, High Priest of Bellico." The Unyar swept the group with his unblinking gaze, lingering for a moment on the elf girl. The sight of her caused the man to pull uncertainly at his long, wispy mustachio. Jackal pretended not to notice, and waited with an open expression. At last, the leader hissed and pulled his mount's reins around. His riders turned their own steeds toward Strava, herding Jackal and his companions across the plain. It was always unsettling to be escorted by these horsemen. Their skill at mounted archery was nearly as legendary as their divine warlord. Just these surrounding eight men could fill Jackal and his crew full of arrows, killing hog and rider in seconds. The Unyars were the oldest hoof in the lots. They had dwelt in Ulwandulas for centuries before Hisparta claimed the land. The hill and tower of Strava were already ancient when the first armies marched down from the north. Halfling pilgrims of Bellico had long wandered the world in search of relics from their god's time as a man, and Hisparta's kings had hosted them many times. So they decreed the shrine would benefit from Hisparta's protection, but was not governed by its laws. During the orc incursion, the Unyars made for indispensable allies, acting as skirmishers and harrowing the thicks across the plains. But their loyalty lay with their god, and the halflings who served as his priests. They kept their homes safe, first and foremost. No orc army ever came close to reaching Strava. At the end of the war, Hisparta exempted the lands surrounding Strava from the lot draw, in order not to anger Bellico and his devotees. The halflings and their Unyar protectors were a neutral, if not wholly unbiased, presence in Ulwandulas. Only the centaurs made war on them, and only during the Betrayer Moon, when all were prey. Soon, Strava loomed above. Gazing up, Jackal had the dizzying perception that the tower was tumbling over, the moving clouds behind adding to the illusion. It may once have been square, but the winds of centuries had gnawed at the stones, countless rains dissolving the mortar. Up close, The entire thing looked ready to collapse, as did the desiccated hill on which the tower sat. A sprawling village lay about the base of Strava, huts and horse corrals radiating from the hill. Human children herded goats and thin gray steers from pens, while women continued the various chores that had occupied them since dawn. One in every three seemed to be fletching arrows. All the men with two good legs and a straight back were a horse, riding off to hunt or patrol, or acting as sentry near the tower. Of the halflings, there was no sign. All would be inside Strava, within the tower, or beneath the hill. The riders escorted the hogs around the western slope, and led them to an empty corral. The size and shape of the pen, as well as the small stable at one end, gave it the appearance of a training yard. The troughs outside the stable were full, and the hogs went to them eagerly. The Unyars waited while Jackal and the others dismounted, and the leader gestured for them to shelter in the shade of the stable roof. Several women entered the corral, bearing jugs and wooden platters covered with linen. These proved to be full of goat's milk and meat. Just as soon as they had set the victuals down upon the ground, the women left. The horsemen tarried only a moment longer. The leader nodded once to Jackal, then followed his men.
"Think we're in for a bit of a wait," Oates declared through a mouthful of roast goat.
Jackal merely nodded as he stretched his legs, keeping an eye on the elf. She went and stood in the back of the shallow stable, in the deepest shadows. Crafty followed her in, offering one of the jugs. She took it without hesitation and drank deeply but with care, not spilling a drop down her chin. Jackal felt a bump at his good arm and looked to find Fetching nudging him with a platter. Seeing the grease-slick meat, Jackal's hunger awoke, and he took a heavy piece between his fingers.
"Courteous of them not to put a guard on us," he said before taking his first bite.
Fetch snorted.
"You know better than that, Jack."
He hummed agreement and nodded. He did know better. They spent the morning resting in the shade. Oates tended to the hogs, inspecting each one carefully before finding a spot in the stable to lie down upon his bedroll. Within seconds, the brute was snoring, drawing a well-used glare of annoyance from Fetching. Crafty sat with his back to the wall, his thick legs drawn up beneath him and his eyes closed.
"You got her?" Jackal asked Fetch, cocking his head at the elf, now curled up with her back turned.
"Sleep," Fetch insisted.
Giving her a grateful squeeze on the knee, Jackal lay back against his saddle and was asleep before he could take a second deep breath. He awoke gently, slowly, his eyes regaining focus upon a small figure kneeling at his side. The bandages were free from his broken arm, though he had not felt them being removed, and the figure was probing gently at his bones with stubby fingers the color of richly fertile earth.
"Apologies," Zirko said, without taking his eyes away from his task. "I tried not to wake you."
Jackal said nothing, watching the halfling as he worked. His long, twisted black locks were kept away from his face by a band of heavy, undyed linen. Limpid green eyes danced, accompanying his hands in the inspection.
"This is a bad break, Jackal of the Grey Bastards," Zirko said at last, his voice surprisingly deep for one so small. "And you have not been kind to it. 2 moons, perhaps more, before it will mend, and even then, perhaps not straight."
"That's why I'm here," Jackal replied. "I need it healed now."
Zirko blew a heavy breath from his nostrils. He looked Jackal in the eye for the first time, searching his face. The halfling said nothing for a long while. At last he stood and walked to the edge of the shadows, which had grown long. The sky above the corral was instilled with the colors of dusk. Jackal sat up and glanced around. Everyone was awake, and he got the embarrassing notion that he was the only one who had slept through the High Priest's arrival. Oates squatted on his haunches, clearly not wanting to loom over Zirko, whose head wouldn't even reach the thrice's crotch. The halfling appeared to be pondering, his back turned. His robes were simple and unadorned, as were the sandals upon his feet. At his side hung a wide, straight-bladed thrusting sword, fashioned in the style of the old Imperium. Knowing the halflings, it was probably from the old Imperium. Waiting at the far side of the corral were two other halflings, their skin and hair as dark as the High Priest's, their garb equally austere. Eventually, Zirko turned around again, his hand stroking at the ring of close-cropped beard surrounding his protuberant lips.
"I am trying to recall the last time a half-orc placed himself in the hands of Great Bellico."
Oates answered.
"It was that member of the Cauldron Brotherhood, wasn't it? The one who took an orc spear in the gut. Can't remember his name."
"Rhines," Fetching said.
"That was him," Oates agreed.
Zirko held up a finger in a show of remembrance.
"Ah, yes. And he has stood with us here every betrayer since, in addition to the traditional rider provided by the Cauldron Brotherhood. I wonder, will your claymaster be as incensed over this as the Brotherhood's chieftain? The mongrel hoofs have often chafed at giving up one rider. Two is often unthinkable."
Jackal tried not to grimace. It was all part of an arrangement made at the end of the incursion, long before he wore a brigand. Every half-orc hoof sent a rider to stand with the Unyars against the centaurs during their unfathomable rampages. In exchange, Zirko gave them warning of the arrival of the next betrayer moon. The diminutive priest had done what his Sparta's keenest star charters could not, and discovered the secret to predicting the moon's chaotic shift. Since the horse cocks first came to Ulwandulas from the broken islands of the deluged sea, they had celebrated the betrayer in an orgy of bloodshed. As a boy, Jackal had wondered if the moon's suddenly changing face had occurred prior to the centaur's migration, but none had ever been able to tell him. The betrayer and the centaurs had been residents of the Badlands centuries before he began asking questions, and were long accepted evils. And evil they were. There was no strategy in the centaur attacks, no goal other than slaughter and rapine to please their heartless gods. The raids were brutal, unpredictable, yet more often than not, the kiln was left completely unmolested, the ill-omened moon giving way to dawn without one sighting of even a single tar. But for every settlement ignored, another was set upon without mercy. A hoof going without Zirko's warning trusted to luck. And luck had been fickle in the past. Just 6 years ago, the Rudders had refused to send a rider to Strava to fight during an impending betrayer. The following summer, Zirko sent them no message of the next coming moon. The Rudders were caught unawares and, though their stronghold held, their neighboring village was reduced to ash and corpse flies. The hoof tried to recover, but Ulwandulas was a harsh land. With no crops, no bed warmers, no children, the Rudders had been forced to disband, its members absorbed by the remaining hoofs. Polecat had been a Rudder before he rode with the bastards. "I need this, Zirko," Jackal said.
"If I must stand with you every betrayer, if that is your price, then say it."
This seemed to sadden the halfling. He dipped his head and smiled morosely.
"How small and covetous we must seem to you," Zirko said softly.
When he looked up again, there was a softness in his face Jackal had never seen before. The expression was almost self-pitying.
"I know you think us niggardly, but the burdens of my people and the demands of my god are unknown to you, and they exist above your inner, shallow judgments. You do not know what it is we sacrifice each time we petition our God to heal an unbeliever.
Sacrifice is served with every meal in the lots, Jackal replied. We all bleed here. That I do believe.
And why should we entreat our